Welcome to another Directions Media Podcast. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief. Today my guest will be Al Leidner of Booz Allen Hamilton. Back in 2001, Mr. Leidner was the director of New York City's GIS project at the city's Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications, or DOIT, D-O-I-T-T. And he was the person most responsible for coordinating geospatial technology efforts during the attack on the World Trade Center on September 11th. I hope you enjoy this interview as Mr. Leidner takes a look back at the events of that day and how GIS became an integral part of the recovery efforts. Al, thanks very much for joining me today, and let's first start by giving our listeners an overview of your work with geospatial technology at the city, and then perhaps what you were called to do on the day that the World Trade Center was attacked.
Okay, I think it's important to understand, first off, that in New York City, the development of GIS had started in the early 80s, and the Department of City Planning was the big advocate. They were supporting census operations and using dime file information, which they transformed into their own center line, and then GIS really evolved from there. It spread to a number of other agencies which needed base maps for engineering operations and for transportation, for example. And then probably in the early 1990s, there became the awareness that we had all these different maps and we needed one central base map to unite them all, sort of in a Lord of the Rings concept. So there was, in fact, a long movement and a gathering of forces and advocates from almost every city agency who were supporting the base map concept, which finally got implemented in 1995, or at least it was flown in 1995, and it took a couple of years for the base to actually be developed. So that prior to 9/11, we were lucky enough to have had a number of agencies deeply immersed in GIS and with a very complete, accurate base map on which to work the event, the 9/11 disaster.
Al, if you would, perhaps step us through the events of that day and give us a sense of what transpired. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that your offices were in close proximity to One World Trade Center. And so if you can, just give us an idea of what exactly happened, when the events took place, and what you were called upon to do on that day.
Okay. At that particular time, I was the director of citywide GIS for the Department of Information, Technology, and Telecommunications, or DOIT. And there was an Office of Emergency Management, and they had a small GIS operation. So they had our base map, and they had planned a number of different mapping and data layers that they knew to call upon should there be an emergency. Needless to say, no one had expected an emergency on this scale. And when the planes hit the World Trade Center, because the Emergency Operations Center was at 7 World Trade Center, that building caught on fire very quickly, and the whole building had to be evacuated. So any GIS plans that had been made in the Emergency Operations Center were, you know, off the boards. They were totally inaccessible. My offices were located 2 blocks away, and when the buildings came down, basically the entire area was cordoned off. There was no access to my desk, to the data. Not only that, telecommunications were cut off between Lower Manhattan and Brooklyn, where the base map was actually stored. So we were in a situation where my staff and the Office of Emergency Management were out of our offices with no access to data and looking at the ruins of the World Trade Center after they had collapsed and really sort of not quite knowing what to do. What happened then was actually I wandered downtown around Chamber Street, down where they would let me go, looking for someone to hook up with to start working the incident, and could find no one, and walked home, which was about 5 miles away uptown in Manhattan. And later that afternoon, I got a call from Larry Naffo of the Emergency Operations Center saying that they had stood up a new EOC at the police academy on the east side in the East 20s, and that they were sending a car to go get me, and they brought me over there, and basically I was handed a diskette and told, we need maps. Right. And I remember that handoff. Here's the disk. We need maps. There was no computer. There was I'm not very technical, so I couldn't have been very much help churning out maps at that point, both because of my skills and because there was no equipment to do it. And it was a real quandary, which I solved by heading uptown to meet a friend, Professor Sean Ahern, at Hunter College, their Carsey Laboratory, which was a big GIS hub for the city and had made tremendous contributions to the development of the base map. And from Hunter College, we started to produce some maps.
Were there any redundancies in terms of a database backup? You said, I think, that the data was stored in Brooklyn. Did Hunter have access to any of that, or was it simply, here's the diskette, and this was our backup?
Well, the base map had been distributed to a number of places around the city, and that was our good fortune. So, yes, Hunter, because they worked on the base map, did have a full copy of it on a server. I should also add here that although our central GIS operations were sort of non-existent for the first number of hours after 9/11, the fire department, which had its own GIS operations in what they call the Phoenix unit, they immediately were able to start to produce maps to support the fire department rescue operations. So although we were wandering out a little bit in the dark, fire department had a terrific crew, a terrific group there, very knowledgeable, and they immediately started to produce maps. And then from my standpoint, when I got up to Hunter, we were able to use the map that they had to start to generate some very simple, basic layouts of the World Trade Center area, the area south of Canal Street. And we literally carried paper copies down to the police academy as a first delivery. So we didn't get a lot done that first day. It was the second day, 9/12, that we were able to get operations going.
And those operations, as I remember, were done at one of the piers on the east side, is that right?
Eventually, by the end of the first week, we had moved to Pier 92 on the west side and the West 58th Street. And by that time, they had ordered, 20, 30 workstations. We had huge plotters set up. We had workspace for about 25 people. But for the first 4 or 5 days, it was a complete bootstrap operation with people bringing in their computers from home, from work, network equipment, plotter equipment. It was coming in from the four corners of the city to just patch together something to start producing maps, because there did start to build a very real demand for seeing things in a way that only GIS can do. I would add here, too, that because we had spent the prior 10 years building and organizing for the creation of the base map, New York City was very well organized. So everyone in the GIS community knew everyone else. We had meetings. We had an organization called GIZMO that was started by the Fund for the City of New York and headed by Jack Eichenbaum. We all knew each other. So as soon as we knew this was going to be a big operation, everyone got out their black books and started to call everyone they knew who could be of help and just bring them into the police academy. And that operation was ultimately brought to Pier 92.
Yeah, so quite a bit of coordination had to go on within those first couple of days and hours in bringing everybody together. You said people were kind of asking for maps. What kind of maps were they asking for? Was it just street networks, building information, anything they can get their hands on? What was the first priority?
First was, we had good planimetrics, and everyone wanted to see the building footprints. Everyone wanted to see the imagery. And so we were able to provide those very simply and easily and quickly. Then probably starting on the second day, there was a real need to see the utility outages. So we began to map places where there was no electricity, where there was no water supply, where there was no gas, and no telephone service. And we basically, that became a first series of maps that we had to reproduce almost on a daily basis. Ultimately, these maps were posted on the web. And it was the first instance that I had encountered where you would create a map, and then within an hour, it would be up on the web for viewing by hundreds of thousands of people. So that was quite a revelation to me, because I'd never really contemplated doing that in the past.
Yeah, because 10 years down the road, here we are, and that's a routine thing. But back in 2001, online mapping and certainly online crisis management like we have today was new, if almost non-existent.
Yeah, and understand that practically none of us was really set and ready to respond to an emergency. That was not our modus operandi. It was not our jobs. So all of us had to become emergency responders and start to think like that in a GIS mode in a matter of seconds. And it was quite a snapping back of the head as we adjusted to the new role that we're being asked to play.
So as you went down the line in the intervening days, 4 or 5 days out, and Pier 92 was stood up, about how many state and city agencies were involved, and perhaps who was the lead agency to coordinate all of the geospatial efforts?
Well, the chief coordinator, of course, was the Office of Emergency Management. They had been hit on the chin by the initial disaster, but they set up operations very, very rapidly and mobilized the whole city to respond to it. And so they called in, I would say that there were at least 15 or 20 agencies, just right off the top of my head, that they brought in key members of to be part of the response team. The agencies themselves mounted operations within their own agency spaces. We were talking and working very closely with a whole host of state agencies, and the state provided invaluable backup and support and services to us throughout the entire event and actually out 3 months from there. And specifically, I would mention the state's GIS division in an organization called CSCIC. And Bill Johnson is well known. And
right.
He and his team just were invaluable to us. They were remote, but they were able to do a lot for us. They mounted the whole remote sensing operation for us or in alliance with us. And then there was FEMA. FEMA came to town very quickly. And, with their USAR teams, which were geared to do mapping work, and they very quickly developed an alliance with the fire department and did incredible work down on the pile on ground zero, working with the fire department and, supporting rescue operations and then recovery operations. So I would say that almost from the start, this was a multi-level governmental operation in which everyone was talking to everybody else out of necessity. And, an enormous amount of camaraderie and joint focus to deal with this disaster. It was really a remarkable, and I think, it was maybe a natural for GIS people, because you know that doing GIS right requires that you collaborate. So everyone who goes into that profession, I think, is a natural collaborator. And during 9/11, we were able to really exploit that capability to the maximum, and everybody was talking to everyone else, everyone was sharing with everyone else, everyone was contributing resources, and it was, quite a coming together.
So over the intervening 10 years that we've had, what have been the greatest changes that you've seen in preparations for crisis mapping situations, either in New York itself or maybe just in dealing with some of these other man-made or terrorist activities that we've seen, earthquakes, hurricanes, as you know, been in the Northeast in particular for some reason recently. So I'm just kind of curious as to your opinion of what you've seen over these intervening 10 years.
Well, what I've seen is just incredible progress at every level of government, and I believe that progress was caused by the focus that the events of 9/11 required us to have, and then got renewed with Katrina and seemed to get renewed every year as some fresh disaster seems to rekindle the memories of the past and keep egging us forward to do more and more. You know, among the more remarkable things that I know have happened in the New York City Office of Emergency Management, they have, with some federal grant monies, I might add, and federal grant monies play a great role in a lot of the improvements that I've seen at the state and local level. In New York City OEM, they've mounted a big effort to build databases that would be useful during an emergency. And so among them are, for example, all the potential helicopter landing spots in New York City have been identified and mapped as a layer. Another important thing that was done was working with the New York City Transit Authority, OEM, with funding from USGS and NGA, NEMA at the time, basically built out a map of all the subway stations in close to 3D. So every one of the 450-plus stations is now modeled. You know, all the different spaces and all the different levels are laid out for that incredibly complex system. And they've gone on and they've built a number of other databases that would be invaluable during any kind of a disaster. Another thing that that they've done is that they've created an application where, and this goes to the need to get maps quickly in an emergency 24/7. So they've developed an application where you identify the different characteristics you want in a map, and you basically, through email, send that into a system, and basically what you get back is, I think, PDFs actually, I don't know the exact form of the map, but it comes back to you within a matter of minutes. And if you're in the field or in a remote office, and if it's midnight on the weekend, you could basically get a map that you need of an area where you need that kind of information. But there are numerous other examples of innovations and new technologies that New York City Office of Emergency Management has implemented, along with the larger citywide implementations of new technology that DOIT, Department of Information Technology and Telecom, has also done. For example, DOIT has implemented a citywide wireless communications for government workers, which greatly facilitates getting information back and forth between field and central office. It's you know, of incredible value if you're working an incident in the field. It would have been something that we would have loved to have had during 9/11. It was very tedious moving data back and forth. There were really no means to do it. Now those means would be there.
Yeah, and I was wondering if you have any information about what is now given to first responders on the scene and what value having maps in their hands would have done on 9/11.
You know, I can't really tell you exactly what their operations look like in the field. I'm guessing that they go out in the field now with handhelds and wireless communications and a lot more information, digital information, certainly than they carried 10 years ago.
How do you think geospatial information was perceived by city managers using the technology today, maybe in either policy decisions or management decisions? What do you think the reaction is or would be to that information?
You mean nowadays or back then?
Well, back then and maybe today. Maybe there's a greater awareness of what could be done with it today. But I'm curious back then how it might have been perceived.
Well, I think that the perception at high levels of city management was actually quite positive, because we'd gone through a very long process of getting the base map approved. It had reached commissioner level in quite a number of agencies, like the Department of Environmental Protection, which played an enormous role in getting the base map built. OEM, obviously, DOIT, clearly, Department of Transportation. So all of those agencies had to sign on to approval of the base map, so it had gone through the commissioners. And in some cases, some of the commissioners were actually technically knowledgeable about things like this, so that we had a pretty good visibility, and a lot of people in high places knew the potential of these systems, so that there was no hesitancy about starting up the GIS operation in support of the 9/11 response, because enough people in the right places had been educated, had taken the time to learn, and simply wanted to press the button and say, we need maps. So they knew by then to say, we need maps and want maps. And I think the difference nowadays is the city managers at a high level are every bit as knowledgeable, with the added refinement of the greater power of current technology. So almost every agency has a website. Almost every agency has maps on that website. Most agencies, if not all, have geospatial operations, which are certainly central to the thinking of the deputy commissioners for information technology, and undoubtedly have come to the attention of commissioners. So at that level, and I'm sure even above, people are very aware of GIS in New York City at very high levels, and I think that accounts for the funding that has been enabled for GIS across the board. Almost every city agency has a major GIS operation, and that's because the commissioners know how useful and powerful it is and have fought for funding for it.
Maybe just one final question, Al, is if there's any particular memory that sticks out, or any particular incident that sticks out on 9/11 or those intervening few days that you could recollect back and view either with amazement or some degree of nostalgia in thinking that, wow, we did an incredible job?
Well, I think the first thing that pops into my head is that somewhere along the first couple of days, I remember somebody leaning over a desk and telling me, did you know that there were gas storage tanks underneath the World Trade Center? And, you know, we had been aware that there were fires on the site that just were not dying down. And we also knew that there was a Freon gas tank, or maybe several of them, which when subjected to heat, could have been a major secondary explosion. Then learning that there were major repositories of fuel under the site, I remember the hair on the back of my head, it's the only place where I have hair, standing up and saying, oh my God. And then immediately calling the state, city sources of information to put together a map that showed where the hotspots were, where the fuel was stored, and where the Freon gas tanks were located. You know, you couldn't do this without GIS. You couldn't do this without flying thermal sensors, which we did, thanks to Hunter College and Sean Ahern there. And you couldn't do it without knowing as precisely as possible the location of those gas tanks and the Freon tanks. And then the operation to make sure nothing happened was that the fire department, with that information, was able to water down the gap between where the fires were and the fuel tanks were and where the Freon was, to make sure that the tanks did not heat up. And that, to me, just epitomized the value of GIS for avoiding a disaster. I wish it could have been used to avoid the World Trade Center tragedy, but we were able to at least make sure that that secondary explosion didn't occur.
And I do remember seeing those thermal images, so they were, certainly of incredible value.
You know, one thing more that I want to mention, maybe because I'm currently working at the federal level, and I want to emphasize the role that the federal government has played over the last 10 years, not only funding initiatives, GIS initiatives at the state and local level, but also building networks. And in particular, I want to cite the Highfield program. I mean, I do work for it, but I'm very happy to be working for it. The Highfield program, the Highfield to the Regions program, which has as its goal to basically network people at all levels of government together towards the goal of sharing information. And to that end, they've put together the HCIP Gold data set and the HCIP Freedom data set, and they brought in NAVTEC data. And not only are they sharing it at the federal level, but they're actually pushing it down to the state and local level. And I really think that that's the kind of initiative that really is pushing us forward to using geospatial information and technologies to safeguard the public.
Well, Al, thanks very much. It's been a great discussion. I really appreciate your insights and looking back on 9/11. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us today on another Directions Media podcast. If you'd like to comment about today's interview, please write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks again, and be sure to tell a friend about Directions.